Looks like we're having trouble with our credits there, but thank you for listening here to Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. The summer movie season is heating up, and it's time to head into the theater with your bucket of popcorn. You'll get the air conditioning, but will you get a good movie as well? We'll find out what to see to get the most bang for your movie buck this hour, as we're joined by Mike Mayo. He's a movie reviewer, co-host of MaxandMike.com, and the author of American Murder. Mike Mayo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Veronica.
Well, you've obviously had your finger on what the best movies are. Talk about what's coming up and what we can get excited about. Give us something to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. I'm slightly surprised that it's been as good a year as it has. Because remember, you know, in the past few years, we've just had all of these sequels and everything, and so you kind of they did really well. Pirates of the Caribbean 3, all of that, And we sort of knew what those movies were going to be, and they did what we expected them to do. And we've got a bunch of more or less original, at least original in comparison to those this year, and they've done very, very well. If you look at the numbers, and I don't have this exactly right. I should have looked it up before we got on the air, but I believe you'll see that profits are up slightly because ticket prices have increased, but ticket sales have stayed about the same. So they're actually considering that kind of a win in Hollywood this year. And there have been really more movies that are overperforming, doing better than they thought they would, than those that are doing less well than they thought. And we got things kicked off. And it's hard to believe, you know, summer officially just started the other day, but the summer movie season actually started back on May 2nd with Iron Man and the Robert Downey Jr., superhero movie, and it has done really, really well, made over $300 million. And I think it is kind of set the tone, because to me, it did everything I wanted in that kind of movie. And more to the point, from the advertising that was on television and other places, my wife actually wanted to see that movie because she's a Robert Downey Jr. fan.
Me too.
She went with me, and she loved it. And if a movie like that can attract her and then deliver what she wants to see, it's really done something right.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked that movie, and I think part of what it did well was it delivered an actor, a superhero actor, and this could have been one of those bland, muscly movies, but it had kind of an emo front man.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr., he's got this difficult past that everybody knows about, and he's kind of a sensitive superhero.
And I think he didn't play on that too much. I mean, I thought he did a superb job, and we don't know exactly, you know, how things are going to go. They always hold the big movies back to the end of the year, the ones that they think are going to get the Academy Award nominations. I think he's got an outside shot at a Best Actor nomination for that, because to me, that movie was much more interesting when he was not wearing the Iron Man suit than when he was. And you can't say that about a whole lot of superhero movies.
I want to give out our number quickly. We'll be taking calls in a moment here. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call to join in. What movies have you seen that you've loved already? If you've seen Iron Man, why did you like it? And what are you looking forward to? I know X-Files is coming out. We've had a long wait on that one. Are you looking forward to that one? Well, tell us what you've seen and what you're looking for in a summer movie at 1-800-642-1234 or call us in Madison 263-1890 or email is talk@wpr.org. So Iron Man had a really strong opening. That one, I guess, surprised a lot of us. What about Sex and the City?
That was the one, again, that really overperformed, because people said this is, to use the phrase that everybody in my business does, I don't mean to offend anyone, it is a chick flick. And it was attracting women audiences, and the idea was that movies that do that will not have the big opening weekend. They'll stay around in theaters longer, because women will, the core audience will go see them, they will tell their friends, they will go see them. But it did really well on its opening weekend, and it has continued, as they say in the business, to have legs. People have, you know, gone to see it every week following. It hasn't really fallen off dramatically the way a lot of these movies do. Typically, the ones that are really hyped will have their, whatever their opening weekend is, and drop maybe 60% in ticket sales by the second weekend. Sex and the City didn't do that.
Well, we've seen some other different kinds of movies. I'm thinking about one, I think opening July 2nd, Kit Kittredge. This is based on the American Girl dolls and books. This is kind of like, I don't know, maybe like Pirates of the Caribbean basing a movie on a ride. Is this going to do well? Have you heard anything about this movie?
I think this is going to be the big midsummer sleeper. I have not seen it yet. It's opened in New York and playing in one theater there. And as you say, next week it opens wide, going up against the Will Smith movie Hancock. It's rated G. It's set in the 1930s. It stars Abigail Breslin, the young woman that we saw in Little Miss Sunshine. She was so good there. And one of the producers is Julia Roberts, who's apparently a big fan of the dolls and the whole character series. I believe they have done some other American Girl films for TV. This is the first one that they've actually done for theatrical release. It's got a really good supporting cast in it, too. I for one, am really looking forward to seeing it. It's not the kind of movie that's designed to appeal to a middle-aged male audience, but it just looks like so much fun with the setting and the characters that I'm really looking forward to it.
What do you think about basing movies on something, as sort of a children's book, something? And these are, I've read these books before. They're thin, and it's based on a doll, so it's obviously got the tie-in there for a product. Do you have any feelings about that kind of thing?
Well, as a movie critic and purist, I would love to decry it, but when you look at so many of the movies we have now, they come from something else. I mean, in the past, they came from novels and plays. Now they come from comic books and video games and dolls and who knows what else. I mean, it's simply the way of Hollywood. When you are investing as much money as you have to in a major studio release, millions and millions of dollars, you really need to, if you're a producer, to feel that there is a built-in audience out there that is ready to buy those tickets. A year or so ago, everybody was really surprised that the movie 300 did as well as it did, because it was an R-rated action picture that looked really strange, and it was based on a series of graphic novels that had a kind of a passionate cult following, but not a big following. And that movie turned out to be one of the big hits of the year, because that cult base really, persuaded their friends to go see it, and they all liked the movie. And so, that proved that you can go beyond those traditional sources to base these things on.
Well, you can see the appeal for having a built-in audience there, but is there any evidence that that kind of thing is sort of squeezing out original screenplays?
I think it is. I mean, and I think what we've been seeing this trend for several years, but the independent movies, the smaller character-based movies simply are having a more and more difficult time, first finding the money to get them produced, and then to find space in the theaters. There are so many of the bigger budgeted things there that they are really just kind of sucking all the air out of the business. There's really only been one little independent hit out there this summer, and it's called The Visitors. A little independent movie made by the same guys who did The Station Agent a few years ago. Just a terrific movie that I strongly recommend you see. You may have to look around a little bit to find it. It is still playing, at least it is in the smaller theaters around here where I live. And I think it's a great movie, but it's only playing on one or two screens in any area. You're going to have to look to find it.
What is it about?
I believe the guy's name is Richard Jenkins. A terrific character actor, probably best known as the dead father on the TV series 6 Feet Under. And he plays a widower who goes to an apartment that he's kept in New York but hasn't been to in a long time to find two other people living there, a young man and his girlfriend. And it's about how he comes to befriend them, and they get to know each other, and then another character has been involved too. If you saw The Station Agent, you know that it's a movie about lonely people meeting each other and finding common ground. That's not real sexy stuff, but it is really terrific here. Again, this is another one that I went to and loved, and hope that a lot of people will see it. And I think that, Jenkins has another outside shot at an Academy Award nomination.
Yeah, I think
he's
good in it. I think I did see a trailer for that, and it did look like it would be a really affecting movie. Haven't seen it yet, though. Let's go ahead and take a phone call from Sarah in Richmond. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I have to say, I saw Iron Man as well, and I absolutely loved it. It is one of the few movies my husband and I could actually agree to see, and I found it very wonderful. But my question is about the Get Smart movie. Now, I was a little too young to see Get Smart on TV when it was out, but I saw it on reruns when I was sick, when I was quite young, and I loved it. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the Get Smart movie because I do like Steve Carell.
Yes.
But I'm not sure because I'm going to have to compare them, especially with Don Adams, and just because that's what I'm used to, and because he Don Adams played the part so well. So and you don't mean to compare him, you just do. So my question is it worth it for me to go see it, knowing that that it has to fall back on the original Get Smart TV programs?
I would say yes, it's worth seeing. I saw, I too am familiar with the old series, and I always thought it was kind of a one or two jokes that they replayed over and over again. And so I can say that I liked the series but didn't love it. And I can't say that I loved the movie either, but I did like it an awful lot. I probably liked it more than I did the series, again, because of Steve Carell, who I think is really funny, and Anne Hathaway, who I think is one of the most engaging young women making movies these days. And kind of anything that she is in, you've halfway sold me a ticket right there.
So you think she did pretty well. I read a local review here in Madison, and it said that she had trouble holding the screen. You don't agree?
No. But then I admit my prejudice here. I mean, she can do almost no wrong, except for Princess Diaries 2. That was a mistake. But other than that, I'm a huge fan of her work.
What about a couple of movies that I sort of think of as a pair? I don't know if you do, too. The Mike Myers movie and the Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, I guess to me, the Adam Sandler movie, You Don't Mess with the Zohan, is much more successful. The Mike Myers movie is the love guru. And I don't know. I'm not as big a Mike Myers fan. I thought the Austin Powers movies had some moments in them that were really good, and some that just seemed to me to be completely offbeat, and I missed the point. And Love Guru, that's pretty much the way I thought too. I just never really got into the characters. The humor is really juvenile, kind of potty humor type stuff, which I like to be a little. If you're going to do that kind of thing, do it a little bit raunchier, along the ways of 40-Year-Old Virgin and things like that. So to me, it just didn't work. Adam Sandler, I guess you could make virtually the same criticisms about him, but for some reason, that worked for me. I like Sandler better.
How is Mike Myers' movie doing in the box office?
Very poorly.
Poorly.
It opened up against Get Smart, and everybody, to have two comedies like that opening on the same day, everybody went to see Get Smart, and Love Guru did a disappointing, I think, $14 million or so in its first weekend.
What do you think is happening with Mike Myers? This is the guy who did Wayne's World, right?
So, right.
Which was hilarious, I thought. What happens when an actor makes bad choices like that time
well,
after
it's,
time?
Part of it, he's been out kind of, I believe it's 5 years since his last appearance on screen in The Cat in the Hat. And other than that, he's been doing voicing the Shrek movies. And I think it's just, kind of a little bit. There's a sense that he's old-fashioned and that Steve Carell is the new wave, and this is the kind of comedies that people are wanting to go see right now. That said, all he has to do is come back, with another hit along the lines of Austin Powers, and he will be a comedy genius again.
We're talking summer movies this hour with Mike Mayo, who's a movie reviewer, co-host of MaxandMike.com, and the author of American Murder. Are you looking forward to hitting the theaters this summer? Maybe you've done so already. Well, tell us what you've seen that you've been excited about or disappointed with and what you're really looking forward to this summer. Maybe you're looking for a movie which would fit the bill for a family with lots of different ages there. What should you go see? You can call us with your questions this hour and your comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. We do have a couple of open lines now, hopefully one for you. And you can also email us if you'd rather at talk at WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk summer movies with Mike Mayo, who is a movie reviewer and author of the book American Murder. And Mike Mayo, let's go to the phones and take a phone call now from Connie in Madison. Hello, Connie, you're on the air.
Hi. A comment on Iron Man. I dislike superhero movies intensely, but my son, a young adult, invited me to go, and no mother in her right mind would not say yes when a young adult invites you to do anything. And what I loved about this movie is that, for once, the superhero is super because he's smart. And we have such an anti-intellectual culture in the United States. I really liked the intelligence, the ingeniousness, the tenacity of that character, and had no idea about this character. I don't read any of these graphic things anymore. So that I liked. And the other movie I'd like to highlight for people is a very probably an indie movie that I thought was just visionary and gorgeous. I don't know if it's been mentioned yet. It's called The Fall. And this is a film that centers ostensibly around a young soldier who is in a hospital for the mentally ill, in a profound depression, possibly suicidal. Actually, not a soldier. He's an actor in a silent movie. And he's feeling very blue. And he is visited by a very small 5 or 6 year old girl who's also in the hospital. Their conversations are simply, you would write a movie around this child. You would simply photograph her and whatever she does, then write a movie to include whatever it was she did. That's how unforgettable she is. But what's amazing is that the film routinely opens out into an imaginative tale that he is telling her. He's telling her a story, and the film zooms out into this absolutely fantastic, almost visionary landscape with characters that are impossible, dressed in fabulous clothing. So you almost feel as if you are inhabiting the imaginative world of a 5-year-old as she hears this story. I just can't speak highly enough of seeing this film on a large screen where you can have these saturated colors and giant landscapes and this child, this luminous child.
What is it rated, Connie?
I think it would be, I don't even know if it's rated, but there's absolutely nothing in it that would offend anyone.
Okay.
I don't know that it would hold the attention of a small child itself, but maybe so, because it has these extraordinarily fantastical fairy tale characters.
I was asking because it reminded me of a movie that came out a while called Pan, which I wanted to see, but then it turned out seemed incredibly dark, so I was wondering if there was anything else in this movie.
Oh, his mood disorder, his blue feeling is about the loss of a love, and it's not violent. It's just terribly, he feels terribly sad because his girlfriend has deserted him.
All right.
And it does a nice job of highlighting a silent film, which undoubtedly was the origin for the plot of the movie. So you see some of it at the very beginning, some of the most beautiful black and white photography at the very beginning that I've ever seen.
Sounds wonderful. So, Mike Mayo, have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen it. I know of it. And it, I haven't seen it because, as we were saying earlier, this is not a mainstream movie. It's told, instead of having a conventional narrative, as Connie was alluding to there, it's really kind of told through the images. It was filmed on these really exotic locations all over the globe. And so it doesn't have the traditional kind of storytelling structure. That's why it has had so much trouble, you know, getting the studio backing. I don't even know if it's still playing. I know it's had very limited release. It's been hard to find. And like Connie, I would love to see it on a big screen. It's clearly that kind of movie. In the same way you were mentioning Pan's Labyrinth, which came out last year, had the same kind of fantasy elements in a more conventional story structure. And Pan's Labyrinth is a little too dark for most children, even though it is told from the point of view of a young girl. I would recommend both of them, and they're the kinds of movies, you know, Pan's Labyrinth is on DVD now, but The Fall, you're gonna, like I was saying about The Visitor, you're going to have to look and search it out. It's just not that easy to find.
Sometimes those little treasures make it more exciting. You find a new discovery that not everybody's seen.
I know, and I just wish that we had a better way to get those out. There's been some talk recently that I've been seeing of that when we move more towards digital delivery of movies through the internet or whatever, that will be the salvation of the independent film. But when we do that, then we pretty much have taken the theatrical experience out of the equation altogether, and that's a little tough for me to accept right now.
And just to touch on what Connie said about Iron Man, and we didn't talk about this yet, is it true, had you heard that Robert Downey Jr. ad-libbed some of his lines? Would that account for some of the wit in the movie?
That might. He is such an intelligent actor. That wouldn't surprise me a bit. I know that he worked very closely with Jon Favreau, the director, and you could tell that I think they really got along very well, seemed to have both been on the same page very much. And I also want to underline what Connie said that I really like, too, that he is a superhero who gets his powers through his intelligence. He's not bitten by a spider or come from a different planet, anything like that. He's a guy who really applies himself, overcomes, you know, his own shortcomings to be the superhero that he becomes.
Thanks a lot for the call, Connie. And we'll take one now from Lisa, joining us from Chicago. Hi, Lisa, you're up.
Hi, Veronica. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was kind of, you know, keeping on the kind of small children idea. I have two small children, a 4-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. And I just saw that WALL-E, I don't know if you say WALL-E or WALL-E, opened. And I wondered, Mike, what you thought of the movie, if a 2.5-year-old would dig it. And also, I have a little fear about it because I look, you know, when I look at it, I go, well, it looks like E.T., you know what I mean? What's new?
Okay, this is brand new. Just opened today. Let me say first, I haven't seen it yet. I really want to. I don't think that there's anything that's going to be too intense for your 2.5-year-old because it's rated G. That said, I understand that the first half of the movie is almost silent, where you've got the WALL-E character, a robot, kind of roaming around a deserted Earth, and he's cleaning things up. And so it's very visual, and only you know whether your 2.5-year-old will be entranced by that or not. I think some kids are going to like it. Some, you know, may not be equipped to handle that kind of storytelling. That said, it's from the Pixar people who really know how to hold on to young audiences. So I would say go ahead and give it a try. I think you know your 2.5-year-old better than I do. The 4-year-old, I would say definitely.
Do you have any thoughts about what a good age is to introduce kids to movies for the first time?
Boy, that is so tough. I think it really depends on the character. Let me say that it's been my experience, particularly recently, I have seen a lot of kids who are way, way too young in PG-13 and R-rated movies. And I don't know if the parents just don't get it, don't understand what the whole rating system is about. But I really think, particularly a lot of the PG-13 rated horror films are just too strong for young kids who don't have the experience to understand the difference between fantasy and everything. And let me say that what I'm talking about here is not kids that have snuck in who are seeing movies they shouldn't. These are kids who have been taken by their parents or guardians or someone to see these movies. And I'm all for particularly young guys sneaking into the wrong movies. I mean, I did it when I was a kid. We all did. And there are certain ones that they probably should sneak into, but others that they really shouldn't. And I don't know. I find it a very troublesome subject because I really don't think it's my point of view to tell parents what their kids should and shouldn't see. I just try to advise them. And particularly with children's movies, I think it's much more important what the reactions of the other kids in the audience is. From everything I've heard with WALL-E, the children are just mesmerized by it. They are just in rapt attention watching the screen. You don't have a lot of running around in the aisles, and that really says a lot more about the movie than any comment I could make.
Well, Baby Einstein, which is popular with, you know, babies, one-year-olds, and that sort of thing, there's no words there either. And it's just, if as long as there's an engaging picture, it seems like it would be something little kids would get into.
Yeah, and the Pixar people really know how to do their kind of animation. And so I feel pretty confident in saying that this is fine for most age kids. It's just a matter of attention span. You know, can a 2.5-year-old, Lisa's or anyone else, handle a movie that's 90 minutes long?
And let me just add my personal testimonial to what you were saying earlier. I was and am to this day scarred by seeing Invasion of the Body Snatchers at too young an age. So I can't agree more with what you said about PG-13 movies.
The original one or not?
I think it was a remake.
Okay. I saw the original, the 1950s one. That was the first late show I was ever allowed to stay up for. And it did mark me for life, and I love it.
All right, let's go back to the phones and talk to Dawn in Appleton. Hi, Dawn, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, first I want to be the 30th or 40th or 50th person to add a hearty endorsement of Iron Man, but that isn't why I called. I'm just joining in the choir on that one. I wanted to call about a movie called The Mongol, which I am so looking forward to seeing. It's by Sergei Bodrov. It is an epic retelling of the Genghis Khan story, and it looks incredibly lush. And my husband and I have been really getting into Russian filmmakers lately because their sense of narrative and their sense of visual it's completely unique but utterly fascinating at the same time. So I was wondering what your guest thought of that movie and if he had heard anything about it as far as early reviews and things like that.
The reviews have been very good. Again, I have to say, I have not seen it because only today did it open up at the Art House Theater near me. So they're doing a platform release on this, which is what they used to do with a lot of movies and very rarely do now, which is that you start it off in just a couple of theaters, let word of mouth build, and then slowly move it out to more theaters. So check your local listings. I think you may well find that it's out there now, because if it's the theater near me that gets these kind of movies tends to be, you know, not one of the first ones, but sort of the second wave of the platform releases. So I feel like if something is playing near me at this kind of theater, it probably has gotten out beyond the big city. So check your local listings, as they say.
Is this a movie with subtitles?
I don't know.
But she mentioned it was
again, she's right about the lush visuals. It's a big epic, you know, with big battle scenes and all that. So it's you know, definitely a big screen movie. Not wait for DVD.
Is there anything else like that coming out that Don might like? A sort of big, lush, sprawling epic?
Oh wow, big epic. I'm looking at my list of what is coming up that has big epic all over it, and the only thing, and it won't be uplifting, it will be very grim. In November, we've got the adaptation of Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which will apparently be a real downer. I can't say that I'm you know, really, yeah, you know, just real jazzed to see that. And coming up on July 11th, we've got the 3D version of Journey to the Center of the Earth. Now, this will be complete cinematic popcorn, not at all like The Mongol. But it is going to be one of these big, big screen, big special effects, craziness kind of thing.
Anything else that would qualify as like a period piece, you know, a Jane Austen type adaptation, anything like that, costume drama?
No. I'm looking at my list here. Well, there is one more. Opening July 18th, Meryl Streep starring in the adaptation of Mamma Mia, the long-running play on Broadway based on the ABBA songs. I must say, I was kind of resistant to this because I hate ABBA songs, but the trailers that I've seen for it, Meryl Streep looks so good and funny in it that it's almost enough to persuade me to go. I'm kind of looking forward to it despite myself.
How can you hate ABBA songs?
Because once I hear one of them, it just worms its way into my brain, and I cannot think of anything else.
If I had one, I'd play it right now. And you'd be stuck all day. Well, let's take another phone call from Brian in Superior. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi. Hey, I love ABBA, too.
All right.
Well, you talked about Journey to the Center of the Earth. I'm a really big film fan, and Anything with Brendan Fraser, there's something about that guy. He's always, they might be silly, they might be serious, but he's good. I really enjoy him.
And he is the star of this new Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Right, right. And who knows if it will be any good or not. I live up in Superior. We have three theaters, and they're all run by the same chain, so we have a tough time getting independent films, and that's kind of a sad thing. We might get one occasionally for a week or so. WALL-E looks like that's going to be really, really good. The thing about Pixar films, as I've always felt, is that before they do anything, they get the story down. So the story is far more important than any animation or anything else in the film. And it just grabs you every single time. That's what makes their film so good, is they're so concerned about the story, not about the effects, not about all this other stuff. I'm not sure what you think about that.
I agree with you 100%, and you can take that back to The Incredibles. To me, they are some of the, just like you say, the most well-thought-out movies that you see. I don't care whether you're talking about other animation, drama, comedy, anything. Pixar films just tend to, that they've got the magic right now. And I've never seen one of them that I didn't like at some level. Some of them I've liked more than others, but they have never really disappointed me.
Now, I think of other animation, computer animation that's been out since then. I'm thinking like Shark. Was it Shark Tale? I mean, it just didn't have the heart. It wasn't
right
there. You know, whereas those Pixar, maybe it's the relationship between the characters or something where they care about each other and you just know it's genuine and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're so well written.
So well written. And just like WALL-E coming up where you say the first half is silent, there was Quest for Fire a few years ago where there was no words at all.
Right.
And I was in Hong Kong, and that's really great for foreign distribution, you know, because they, you know, don't have to invest so much money in all that translation and all that kind of thing. I wanted to talk about Indiana Jones real briefly, I guess. I enjoyed the first and the third one, and the second and the fourth are kind of in the same boat, in my opinion, you know. And what I liked most about the fourth one was his relationship with Marion again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was
the Karen Allen character.
Yeah, that was the best part of the whole film. I mean,
yeah,
all this extra stuff where they kind of go over the top with the special effects and stuff. I mean, they go so far and then they go too far.
Yeah.
You know? And you don't need all that extra stuff to make it really, really good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think they felt like they had to do that. And I would slightly disagree with you. I like the first one and the fourth one. Thought two and three had some problems with. And I guess a lot of my liking of the fourth one was simply nostalgia and remembering, how much I enjoyed the first one. It is in my top three all-time movies. So that kind of carried over to number four. I agree with you that the whole parts with Karen Allen were the best parts of the film. The special effects, and I don't think I'm giving anything away to say that near the beginning of the film, he escapes an atomic explosion in a refrigerator. And once you've set that as your level of reality, you can do just about anything, and they do.
Well, what did you think about the guy playing his successor?
Oh, Shia LaBeouf. I think he is a really good young actor, and of all the kids of his generation, I think he's got the best shot of being the next movie star. I mean, I'm not sure how good an actor he is and if that's really important, but we saw him last year in Transformers, where he managed to hold his own against all those special effects. He's did some other really nice movies when he was much younger as a kid, one called Holes that I really liked a lot. And then he did one also last year, I believe, called Disturbia, which was kind of an updated Rear Window set in suburbia, where he, again, I thought, managed to take less than great material and handle it very well. So I think he's a real up-and-comer. The kid's got a lot going for him.
All right, we're going to take a break now, and then we'll come back and talk more summer movies with Mike Mayo. He's a movie reviewer and co-host of MaxandMike.com and author of American Murder. Well, what movies are you looking forward to? What have you seen already, and what did you think of it? Are you going to see a lot of movies this summer, or do you generally only take in one or two? Well, call us and tell us what you're thinking about summer movies at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking summer movies this hour with Mike Mayo, who's co-host of MaxandMike.com and the author of American Murder. And taking another phone call now, let's get Joe from Oshkosh on. Hi, Joe. Oops, sorry, Joe. Can you start over? I've got you now.
Sure. Two movies that I'm looking forward to that I've read a couple of good things about and wondering if you've seen them or heard anything about them is one of them is a Turkish movie called The Edge of Heaven, and the other is one called Quid Pro Quo with the actress Vera Farmiga, whom I think is really an engaging actress. Have you heard or seen those at all?
Now, Edge of Heaven, no, I have not. No, nothing about it. And isn't Quid Pro Quo the film where she is entranced by people who are disabled?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. That had a very limited theatrical release, and it will be out on DVD very soon. I've already been seeing announcements for it in the trade publications. So if you didn't see it in theaters, I think you'll get a chance to see it on DVD very soon. People are comparing it to David Cronenberg's Crash. Nick Stahl, I believe, is also in it. And I agree with you. I think she's a really interesting actress. She's done some nice work lately.
Okay, good. I'll look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you for your call, Joe. And we do have an open line now if you'd like to get in this hour. The number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'll go back to the phones. Here's a call now from Frank in Prairie du Chien. Hello, Frank.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was wondering about the new movie Dark Knight, and I know it's a Batman. It seems like once they get a series going, a few movies, they get the storyline so far, and then all of a sudden they revert back to almost like the beginning again. And I was just wondering why they're doing that or coming out with this new movie.
Well, this one is indeed the kind of the sequel to Batman Returns, the Christian Bale film that came out a couple of years ago. And this is kind of famous for, you know, one of the wrong reasons. It's the last film that Heath Ledger made. He plays the Joker in it, and from everything I've seen, he is just tremendous in the film, and the film really looks like it's doing all of the things that I want a Batman film to do. It opens July 18th, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. Again, has Christian Bale as Batman. I thought Batman Returns was one of the best movies of its kind I'd ever seen. I liked it more than most people did. It you know, did fairly well, and of course well enough to have the sequel, but to me, the sequel, and I don't often say this, looks like it might be even better than the original. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing this one.
What is it you want a Batman film to do?
I want a Batman film to be dark, and I want the focus to be on the Bruce Wayne Batman character and not on a really, you know, loud, flashy, basically silly villain the way that Jack Nicholson was in the first Batman film with Michael Keaton those many years ago. Much as I enjoyed that film, I wanted to know more about Batman. I like him for kind of the same reasons we were talking about Iron Man. You know, here's a guy that doesn't have any real superpowers other than his intelligence and the various demons that drive him, and I think that's a really interesting character.
So the psychological aspect is sort of what makes it interesting to you.
Very much.
Yeah, kind of the same thing as Iron Man. All right, well, thanks a lot for that call, and we'll take one now from Robert in Stevens Point. Hi, Robert, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering if your guest is looking forward to seeing the next Hellboy movie.
You're hitting these right into my wheelhouse, Robert. I was another big fan of the first Hellboy film. made by the same guy that did Pan's Labyrinth, by the way, Guillermo del Toro. I think he's a really interesting filmmaker. To me, the Hellboy movies are so much fun because of their humor. They've got a really kind of wacky sense of humor, and they are just completely over the top, even by superhero movies, because, you know, Hellboy's this big red guy. Again, the trailers for that make it look like they took everything that was so good about the first film, and they've really kind of amped them up some more. And again, I just hope they stick with the character of Hellboy, because I found him to be a really interesting guy to spend time with.
Yes. Yes, I also... Yes, I like the original, too. Particularly, I'd suggest watching the director's cut on DVD if you haven't done so already.
And there are only about 18 different DVD editions of Hellboy out there, so it's not too hard to find the director's cut.
Are these based on a comic book?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that when I went and really enjoyed it, not knowing anything about it, so I guess it did its job.
Yeah, I did too, and I went into it as only a slight fan of the comic book and came away from it a big fan.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like something you would obviously love, a big red guy with romance problems, but it's pretty good stuff. All right, let's take another phone call now. Let's see, we've got Adam on the line from Oshkosh. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I guess while I've been on hold, everyone's been kind of hitting all the movies that I want to see, but just to reiterate how excited I am for The Dark Knight, I think that what the director has done is really taken what was sort of ruined in the previous movies, like really one of my favorite superhero, an amazing character overall written, and made it seem as realistic and feasible as you can with a comic book superhero.
Exactly.
So I'm really excited for that. I think it's probably going to be one of my favorites of the year.
Are you interested in seeing Heath Ledger? Is that part of the appeal for you?
I've never been a Heath Ledger fan, but from the footage I've seen of him in this film, I think he's going to, dare I say, blow away what Jack Nicholson did with the Joker. And I personally believe it's going to be a career-defining role for him, unfortunately, so late. But I'm definitely looking forward to it.
And there's been some talk of a posthumous Best Supporting Actor nomination for him.
Yeah, interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised from what I've seen.
Have they ever done that before?
Oh, gosh. The only other... I think Peter Finch in Network, but I think he may have died after he was nominated. I'm not at all sure about that. I shouldn't even have said it to begin with.
That's an interesting thing, though. Well, also opening on July 11th, you're talking about Hellboy, which is opening July 11th before. What about Meet Dave, the new Eddie Murphy movie?
Yeah, this one looks really strange. As he plays some kind of alien from outer space who appears as a giant robot, Dave, and then as a little bitty, you know, like 2-inch tall Dave, both played by Eddie Murphy. I don't know. Eddie Murphy has had such a spotty track record over the past few years. I mean, he does the great work in Dreamgirls, and then, you know, we get the very strange things where he's putting on the fat suit and all that. I just wish he'd get back to being Eddie Murphy, because when he is at his best, he is such an engaging screen presence that I just want to see more of him. Go back and take another look at Beverly Hills Cop or something like that, and you will just be shocked at how good the guy was.
You know, strangely, I feel like his turn, isn't he the voice for the donkey in Shrek?
Yes.
I feel like that's more Eddie Murphy than the Eddie Murphy movies.
Yeah, very much. And you could almost say the same thing about, you know, Mike Myers as Shrek, too. I mean, I think that's the best work that either of them have done recently.
What about this other movie? I haven't seen it, but it sort of makes me nauseous just reading about it. It's called Space Chimps. Two NASA chimps find themselves on a fantastic journey to save a strange, uncharted planet's inhabitants. Can that possibly be good?
No. It can't. I mean, I think chimps are kind of creepy anyway, and the idea that anyone, that they can't have paid more than $1.50 to make this movie. And I just hope that this is a cruel hoax that they're playing on us. You know, and often this happens. Oftentimes, you will see ads for movies and read about them, and then they never show up. And, you know, if there is any justice in this world at all, that's what's going to happen with space chimps.
The only good news is that they don't look to be real chimps. That would make it worse.
Please let this not happen.
Okay, let's go on to Ryder in Spring Green. Hi, Ryder, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I guess I hadn't heard anything about it until listening to your program, but you say there's a new X-Files movie coming out. And I guess my thought on that is, don't you think they've waited too long and the series or it's kind of lost its steam?
Yeah, I mean, how long has it been since there's been an episode on television even? I really don't understand this. And I didn't sense a great, you know, cry from the fan base for another X-Files movie. To me, this one is something that's, more than a day late and a dollar short.
Yeah, it seems like the previous movie, too, it was kind of a poor attempt to wrap things up and then to leave such a large gap. I don't know, I don't hold much hope for it, I guess.
Exactly, and I always thought that, to me, X-Files worked better as episodic television than it did on the big screen. That weird kind of claustrophobia and paranoia that they worked with just worked better within the TV series than in a theater.
And all that said, I'll probably go see it.
To me, that's one. I think I will probably wait for DVD on that.
Well, that one is coming out July 25th. If you're interested in seeing that, it's called The X-Files, I Want to Believe, July 25th. So I'm sure there's still a core of X-Files fans out there who will, you know, even these many years, go see it.
Oh, I'm sure there are. But are there enough of them to make it into a big, you know, summer blockbuster hit? And maybe they're not expecting it to be that.
That's another question, yeah. Okay, on to Andy in Peshtigo. Andy, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, I'd like to talk about the upcoming comedy Tropic Thunder. But before I do, I just wanted to mention that I think he was a little confused earlier. He said that The Dark Knight, which I'm very anxious to see as well, with the sequel to Batman Returns. I think what he meant to say was Batman Begins.
Oh,
Batman
you're
Returns
right, you're
was
right.
A 92 Tim Burton film.
Yep, you're right.
Good
Absolutely.
Job.
Anyway, Tropic Thunder. Have you heard of that one?
Yes, and I'm really looking forward to this. This is a comedy with Ben Stiller, Robert Downey Jr., and Jack Black, where they're playing actors who think they are training, going to kind of a boot camp
right.
to play a role in a military movie, and they get caught up in a real war. Robert Downey Jr. is playing a great Australian actor who is doing his part in blackface, and apparently it just pushes all kinds of buttons, goes way, way too far in a lot of ways, is insulting and incorrect, and I really cannot wait to see it. It's Ben Stiller's second directorial film. His first one was Zoolander.
And when is that one coming out?
August 15th, I believe.
So that's a summer
remember
movie.
Remember the date.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr., his career is really booming, isn't it?
Oh, it is. He is right now one of the hottest guys in the business, and it's because after he went through all his troubles and really did clean up his act, he has, you know, apparently just become Mr. Reliable. You know that when you hire him for something, he's going to be one of these guys who shows up on time and does his job and gives you a great performance. He's not done anything bad recently. I can't recall ever seeing him in what I thought was a poor performance.
Well, it also seems like he's reinvented himself.
Yes.
Starting with there was that sort of shoot 'em up crime tongue-in-cheek thing with Val Kilmer that I thought was really good.
I remember that now. I'd kind of forgotten that. He was... that was a very strange movie, and he was as strange as anyone else.
I loved that movie.
Now, people sometimes forget that he's an Oscar nominee. He was
right.
In Chaplin, and it just shows how versatile he is.
A terrific movie, and if any of our listeners haven't seen that or it's been a long time, take a look at that on DVD. That was an Oscar worthy performance. There was nobody was giving him anything on that one. He did terrific work in that movie.
All right, thanks a lot for that call, Andy.
Thank you.
We have time for maybe one more call. Let's get in Ryan in Chicago. And Ryan, if you could keep your comments short, please. Thanks.
Yeah, one movie I'm really excited about is, I think it's supposed to come out in August, is Choke. I always have a hard time pronouncing Chuck's last name. He wrote Fight Club and Survivor.
Oh, yeah, Patunik or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's Polonic. Survivor was going to be made into a movie, but it had to do with a plane crash, and it was right around 9/11, so they canceled it. But Choke looks really interesting, and I think that it's going to have the same production value as Fight Club.
Now, is that... Tell me about this, because I'm not familiar with it.
It's about... It's kind of based on the same thing as Fight Club style. A lot of his characters are the same. It's a guy who goes through life. He's kind of still lives with his mom, and the reason they call it Choke is he fakes choking in expensive restaurants, and the people that saved his life keep in contact with him, sending him money and cards, and he kind of has a little personality disorder. And like Fight Club, it builds way up, and then just everything comes crashing down to a reality at the end. And the same with Survivor. It actually is almost the same way. That's something he gets criticized for, but I think Victor Mancini is who's the lead character in that.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Ryan. And Mike Mayo, any thoughts on Choke?
Well, I think it sounds from what Ryan said, it is going to be very much like Fight Club in that it is not, it is for the fans only. I don't see this really breaking out to a mainstream audience, especially, you know, released this time of year. It sounds interesting in the good and bad senses of the term.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your time, Mike Mayo. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're talking this hour with Mike Mayo, movie reviewer, co-host of MikeandMax.com. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.